Hello, everyone.
Hey.
Hello.
And welcome to our fifth episode of our Raw Talks podcast, live straight from the farm here from our Somatic Stress and Trauma Healing Retreat Center. And Simba is with me, of course, as usual.
Hello.
And today we have actually our first guest for this podcast season, and we will start inviting more guests, more people who are like-minded and have things to share, and people who have interesting topics to bring to the discussion. And today our guest is Natasha Nielsen.
Hi.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here on the farm and in the podcast.
Yes, you are actually on the farm.
Yes, I am. So live from the farm from all three of us. That's cool.
Yeah, so you've been with us a little bit less than a week.
Yeah.
But maybe we start by introducing you. So maybe you introduce yourself.
I can. So I am a detox specialist and holistic nutritionist. So I coach private clients, group workshops, host retreats, used to do in Thailand, might do now in Thailand again. I work with restaurants in creating healthier menus and concepts. So everything within the field of health and detoxification is what I work with and has been doing for some years now, or many years now.
Amazing. Thank you. And today we are going to discuss food relationship and food addiction. So yeah, let's dive right in. What would you say that your experience is with food and food addiction?
Ooh, I've got lots of personal experience, first of all, first-hand experience. Started earlier than I actually was aware of for many years. It did already start in my childhood when my parents got divorced, and which was already when I was 3 years old. And whenever I came to visit my dad, it would be living off basically fast food, soda, and candy. So I made the connection to like men and daddy's love with all of that kind of foods. And I grew up in two unsafe homes, I would say, with a dad who was drinking sometimes, didn't know what to expect. Stepdad in Denmark was drinking all the time. So whenever I was in an unsafe space, I would already then self-medicate with food, but that wasn't something I thought of or was aware of until many, many years later. When I first thought of my relationship in towards health started, and was when I got diagnosed with PCOS in my teenage years. Because I was bleeding constantly and I had like a lot of body fat I couldn't lose, really bad skin. So the doctor diagnosed me with that, gave me some pills and told me, there you go, you have to accept this is how you are and you're going to take this the rest of your life. Mm. And I thought so for many years, but then I was lucky enough to meet some people within the holistic health industry, which told me with the right exercise, with the right diet, you can get rid of this medication and actually get rid of the PCOS. So they put me on a protocol, and this was the first time I kind of was shown that food can change the state of our body. So within a few months, I was completely free of PCOS and the medication, and I could see my body also changing, which of course makes you want to have more. So what did I do? I signed up for a fitness competition because I was finally going to get my dream body after never thought I would ever have it. So I tortured myself, as you do, with this fitness competition into a very good shape, producing a lot of stress, of course, very clean diet, overeating. And once the competition was over, I didn't have that goal anymore. And that started a whole journey of hating my body because now it wasn't looking the same way. I couldn't keep it up. I started binge eating secretly at night. Couldn't control myself. At that point, I was working as a personal trainer. I felt like a fraud. So I hired a coach to help me. Thought I was going to talk about how to fix this binge eating. And instead, we ended up talking about how much I miss my dad and haven't dealt with this grief properly. Ended up crying my eyes out for an hour. And that was the first connection I made with emotions and food.
Yeah.
So that dive into that. That, of course, took some years to like unravel it all. Periods were better, periods were worse. I had to change the whole way of training and eating because I was just not doing it out of love for myself. I was doing it out of, again, torturing my poor body. So yeah, that is just a short story of my history with food. And yeah, I think then I've dived into fasting and plant-based eating and all of it later on, because that really attracted me to go even deeper. And I think that was how we actually connected, was on my water fasting journey, when a little over a year ago I did a 10-day water fast, and is this supportive community on Instagram. And yeah, we connect there. Never met in person, but I could see that you were like-minded people. So so we stayed in touch on Instagram, and then I was in Chiang Mai now, and I think you reached out to me one point before I was here, but I didn't have so much time to meet up. And then I've had this pull that I needed to meet you this time. Texted you, we had a dinner, and we just immediately clicked, and now I'm here.
Yeah.
Right into the farm experience here, right, living with the spirit, and I'm loving it. It's amazing. It's a step on my journey, a step deeper. So, yeah, I also kind of get curious just a little bit about, maybe already shared with your followers, but maybe we have some new ones, about your journeys, your personal journeys, relationship with food, how that was like.
Yeah, I think that my relationship with food is a bit more complicated than Simba's relationship with food. But no, my food relationship started very, very early. Same with as you. It was something that I started to control. I mean, this is what I've learned, like lately, as my own healing journey has progressed. I had, of course, no clue about that.
No,
at the time, but no. I started to starve myself very, very early. So when I was 14, I think I started to like not eat. And then that went on for a couple of years, and my period went away and things like that. I was quite young. And then I decided that, oh, I can't live like this, because I realized like, oh, I'm sick. I'm sick. I don't want to be sick. So I just forced myself to stop starving myself. And then that worked for a little bit. And then I started overeating instead. So I have had a very strong relationship to like overeating, not eating, overeating, not eating, and so that has been with me since then, and it's only lately that I don't do that anymore. I've been working very, very deep, and that has been the hardest thing for me during the years. So like all the other things has been, I mean, of course, it's been a ride to heal from so much stress, because my thing has been that it's so much stress, and my body has been in freeze for many, many, many years, and working through that has, of course, been challenging. But the food relationship is the deepest one for me. It's like, it's so deep.
Which it is for actually most people, whether yes, aware of it or not, I would say.
That's why we're doing this episode, because it is so deep.
Yeah.
What about you, Simba?
Yeah, I was listening to when you guys were sharing your story, and I think my story, I figured it out, typical male-wise, I would say. I actually have to reverse it. So when we got to Thailand, Sarah kind of invited me into the fasting and the detox. I was kind of eating healthy, working as a personal trainer, holistic lifestyle coach. So I kind of always had that about me, that I want to eat healthy, I want to do good things, practicing martial arts and sports since an early age. But it wasn't until we started doing more detox and fasts that I started noticing, wow, I actually want to eat because I'm cranky. Because the story I had before was like, oh, I haven't eaten, that's why I'm cranky. Oh, my blood sugar is low and this. And I was like, no. It was unprocessed emotions coming up, right? So that was really my start of the journey. So I went the complete opposite. I didn't know it from an early age. I learned it a couple of years ago, and then I started to see how that was, you could backtrack it to certain moments in my life and certain behaviors that I picked up because of things that happened in the past, and how I was kind of using food in a different way, right? But it was like, it was always need to be the best food, the cleanest, I spent so much money on food, and you know, it's a good investment, but it can also come to an excessive point where you kind of like, you know, it's not rocket fuel I'm putting into myself, right? It's about a conscious choice of what am I eating and what is it giving my body. So yeah. I think I had an idea of eating healthy. And as I got to Thailand, I realized, you know, there is a conceptual idea, like from an intellect, like an ideology. And then there is that you're actually connected to what you're eating and you start to listen to your body. And I got into better shape than I ever was. And I was like, how's that possible? I'm counting this and I'm eating this and I'm doing everything right, right? But when you actually listen to your body and follow from that point, that was the real gift and the real power, I would say, with this whole journey of eating. And, you know, I wasn't too happy, of course, about it in the beginning. I lost 10, 11 kilos, all my gains, all my hard-earned muscles, you know, I'm like feeling less of a man and like, you know, all of these things coming up. But that was probably why I built my body up the way that I did too. So I had to kind of go there. My body had to kind of be skinny and go to this point for me to flush these emotions out.
And I'm just curious, because this is something I often hear, especially from male clients that are so curious about exploring this fasting, especially go on that journey with themselves, but they're so afraid of the gains, like losing them. Yes. So how do you still overcome, like allowing yourself to do that, even though you were also worried you're gonna, and you were day by day, losing all of that?
Yeah, it is really a mind shift, right? And for me, everyone is different. Like everyone goes into the level they feel comfortable at working with this, but we kind of devoted our life here to going as deep as we can and clear up as much as we can, but still living life, right? Not torturing ourselves just to let go of something. But I think, yeah, there is elements of it that has to do with how you view yourself as a man or how you should look like, what is expected of you with your partner or with the opposite sex or same sex, depending on what you're drawn to. So I think it has a lot to do with self-image in general, I would say. Yeah. And I think you learn so much about it. I mean, at university, I was studying behavior science within sports and fitness. This was a couple of years ago. And then men was just starting to come out about food addiction or food disorders or, you know, but these complex cases where you look super ripped and shredded and fit, but you're actually doing something that's very addictive and that's very abusive to yourself. But everyone is kind of pricing you and giving you good compliments. And wow, keep it going. Oh, you can keep this discipline and you're eating so well and training. And on the inside, it's just like purgatory because it looks good, but it doesn't feel good. So I think a big part of it, you know, health is having big bulky muscles doesn't mean you're healthy. That means you have muscles. That's pretty much what it is.
And Sarah, thank you for sharing. But Sarah, you can probably agree to that happens amongst women too. Like the more weight we lose, the smaller we get, even though it can be, which we both experience, and it's super unhealthy. suffering and starving, you get this encouragement and compliment for other women, say from other women saying how great you look. So it makes you want to keep it up, even though you know what you're doing.
I mean, what I have learned that so you asked Simba, like, how he managed that, you know, like losing gains or getting skinny as a man. And I mean, it's just the same thing, even though it's for women or for men. But what I have learned from the fasting is that it's not a physical experience. It's a spiritual experience. 100. And it's, yes, it's about rising above the physical and rising above society and rising above whatever someone else tells you. And the more that I healed myself and the more I stepped into my own power, so to speak, my own truth, and really connected with my body and like what was right for me, the less other people's opinions started to fall off. So it was just me and me. It's like, and I remember when you started to lose weight, Simba, and you were starting to have all of these things coming up and the mind chatter and like, oh, I can't do this. And I had done it a little bit longer than you, so I could guide you a little bit through that. And what came up for you was like, the opinions of others and your role as a man and your role in society. And as soon as you can, so fasting for me is breaking through that or breaking free from anyone else. It's like you and your own journey and like rising above the physical and entering to the emotional and your belief system and your culture and your programmings. And so it's a very dualistic journey because it's so deep with the programming that we should be skinny as women and you should be bulky as men and ripped and whatever. And yeah, that's a very, very interesting topic and something that everyone who is going on this journey should be aware of. That's what it is. And when we help people here at the farm, people come with all kinds of problems. But what we see, the common thing between everyone else is that it's the food addiction is like the deepest one. As it's so deeply programmed with the food.
Yeah, and also because it's one of, I mean, it's probably the hardest to get rid of because you can't live without it. Whereas if you got the cigarettes, the alcohol, the drugs, you can live without those.
Mm.
Food, you can't. So you still have to have it, but you have to have a healthy relationship with it.
Yeah,
that's what most people struggle with.
Yes, and because the trauma and the stress is just getting deeper and in younger age, and people aren't doing very well, like physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally. The food is so ready available, and we are not used to have the overload of, I mean, it's just everywhere, especially like in the West and not the countries where they don't have enough food, but like in the Western countries and many places around the world, it's just everywhere. It's like everywhere you go, you can just grab everything and it's super unhealthy. So it creates an environment in the body that just wants more and more and more of these unhealthy things. And it goes completely out of hand because people don't know how to deal with their underlying stress and emotions.
Yeah. Yeah. And also because a lot of the foods, especially the very processed ones that we buy in packaging that are often connected with some kind of commercial, whether it's in TV or there's actually stuff put into those things that are making us want to overeat them, that is making them more addictive. Because, of course, the food industry is a business like a lot of other industries. And they're only earning money the more we're buying and the more we're eating. So, of course, that's the thing about those kind of foods. But that doesn't mean you can't be addicted to even healthier foods. You can. It's just different reasons behind why. And it's always just one reason either, whether it's emotional or whether it's a physical. At least that's what I've
I have a question. How do you work when you work with people who have a food addiction, which I mean most people have, and because people are so afraid to use the fasting with people who are deep into some sort of food addiction.
Yeah.
How do you navigate that?
I've actually done that. I screen people always, so I see where they're at in their mindset. And I think the biggest thing is the reason behind why they're doing it. Mm-hmm. Are they doing it because they really want to change and they're ready? You can feel they're ready to change this addiction or this relationship with food. Or are they doing it because it's a weight loss tool? Mm-hmm. They look at it as a weight loss tool. Then no, they're not there in their mind yet where they're able to do it in a healthy way and take that in, even though I might be saying it. But I had a very young girl actually who had been struggling with like anorexia and bulimia back and forth for years, and I actually took her on a fast. She was probably the sickest one, and I wasn't sure it's a good idea to work with her or not, but she convinced me and I just had to do it. So it was amazing to see the journey she went on and how it changed her relationship with herself. Like in the beginning, she did not trust her body. She didn't trust herself around food. She kept asking me, is this potion big enough? Is it too small? Because I never just throw them into the fast. I prepare them for it and I need to see how they're eating before they start fasting. But I had to guide her to listening to her body. And sometimes I find that even with clients that doesn't have any kind of eating disorder, just like more like a normal food addiction, I like to fast with them. That's still a disorder, I would say. But yeah, I like to put them on a fast because sometimes we cannot trust the signals in our body because they might not be ours. And also with people that are deep in their eating disorder, who knows how many parasites they've got inside, candida, all of that. And if that is playing with our minds at the same time as we're trying to listen to what my body is telling me, then how do we know if it's the parasite talking or the candida that's so strong? This is like this fungus, like craving stuff, or if it's actually my body. So I like to put them on some kind of fast or detox to reset the body and then build up that relationship, that trust in the body, because I don't expect them to have it before that. So I demand that all of my clients, they don't have to go on a fast if they're not ready for it, but they definitely have to go on some kind of detox. Mm. So that's how I kind of work with people. Yeah. What do you guys do?
What would you say, Simba, is your... How do you feel about someone who has like a food addiction using fasting?
Yeah, so I think what you said, Natasha, is really good to see, you know, the intention, see the mindset of where someone is coming. And like you mentioned, if you have fungus and candida, it's going to be very hard to do anything, right? What is what? But there is a level of disconnect between it all that kind of binds it together, right? If you go to a store, whether you buy organic or non-organic or whatever you buy, right, you're taking a plastic piece and putting it into your cart, right? Was it alive? Was it not alive? There's no real connection to it, right? So I think a lot of it is mentally based from coping stories and belief systems. So what I specialize in is really for people to feel, you know, what is my body actually telling me besides all the experts on gram protein per kilogram or whatever, you know, that's based on a certain group demographic of people. And then you decide that's what everyone should do. That might not be the case for you. That might actually be the complete opposite for you. So I say it's a whole journey of getting to know yourself, right? And it's kind of like trying to get to know yourself when you live in a room full of people, right? It's going to be very hard. You need to spend a little bit of time alone, right? So if you have parasites, you have candida, you're not connected to yourself. There's noise all the time. You're not going to know what's what. You kind of need to create that environment where you can figure out who am I, what's really mine, you know? And that's also why we kind of created a place here at the farm for people to come away from what your parents say, your teacher, your friends, your guide, whatever, and just figure out for yourself, what is it that comes up? Because I know I did that for many years. As soon as I felt something, I went and I shared it with someone else, and they're going to put their opinion on it, and someone else puts their opinion on it. And before you know it, what was it that I even shared? What was my insight? I think the main part is to really figure out who are you and where am I coming from? And like you said, you know, that's, I think that's the most important screening part, and maybe guiding people towards that part before even starting the journey. Because if you don't know that, then, oh, I didn't get the results I wanted in a week, I'll take the next one and the next one. And you didn't know which fast you did, right? You didn't know what result you're getting because you're just mixing things. And that's kind of what we see. But going here and there. So really figure out who you are and create an environment where, regardless of what you follow, choose one thing and follow it. Choose a coach and follow that, and give it a good 3-6 months before you actually look for a result.
I would say that because a lot of people say that you can't go on a fast because you have like a food addiction or an eating disorder. And it says that, yeah, the fasting will trigger your binge eating or your anorexia or purging or like whatever it is that people are doing. And I mean, that is on one hand, that's true because, but the food relationship doesn't really have anything to do with the food. That's the thing it's like saying that a fasting would trigger alcoholism. Maybe it would if you have something deep inside of you that is untreated. It doesn't have to do something specifically with the food just because you work with the food as a tool. The fasting is going to show you what you have not dealt with, period, no matter what it is. And if you have a food addiction or an eating disorder which I don't call it that, but then that's going to show. If you haven't worked through that, that's going to come up. And if you do have a very strong food relationship that is affecting your life in negative ways, then you can use the fasting to address that. That's why we have created this space where the fasting and the detox is only one tool, and we have this complete support system around it to work with whatever comes up. So I would say that for people who are unsupervised or working with someone who has no knowledge in what actually is going to come up, then yes, I would not recommend them to work with the fasting with someone who has a deep food addiction. But using the fasting as a conscious tool to work through whatever it is that you need to work through, I would say 100% yes, because it's so freaking powerful. It just cuts right through, like what you said, Simba. One of the main, I mean, it's a very popular thing, like, yeah, I can't fast because I will get angry if I don't eat every 4 hours. And then it's like, no, you're angry and you need to eat every 4 hours to keep it, to shove it down. So it's about lifting. It's the food is just super. It's like a cushion, a security blanket. It's an addiction. It's just what it does is that it affects the nervous system. It grounds the nervous system, because when we have eaten, the body thinks, oh, because we had food, we are now safe and everyone around us is safe. And it means that we can rest because we actually managed to get food. So it used to be an accomplishment that, you know, the tribe worked together and you managed to hunt and things like that. But here you just go to 7-Eleven and buy a candy bar and the body goes like, yes, we're safe. So it's just a tool, and figuring out why you need to use the food as a comforter or to feel safe is the golden key. And removing that food, then it all comes up to the surface, ready to pick.
Yes, I think the key points here, as both of you are mentioning, is also one, making sure you're doing it for the right reasons.
Yes.
That you're ready for what's coming up and you have somebody to hold the space to guide you, both through the before process of finding your why, maybe if you don't, preparing your mind and the body for the fast, and definitely during and definitely after, refeeding the body in a healthy way. And then also, two, doing it in the right environment, not being around all these stressors and people that are triggering to you, that you maybe have unfixed business trauma with. So this is definitely a perfect place for it. If anyone has the opportunity to come here and do it, that is providing everything. You don't even have to think about anything. For me, myself, I locked myself in an apartment and I did it there. I wish I could have done it here, but now I am going to actually it's starting tomorrow. So the right environment is important. Doesn't mean you can't have anyone around, but you need to really consider how this is going to affect your process and where you are and what you're doing and so on.
And so just to be clear, we're not saying that you have to use fasting to work with your food relationship or food addiction. It's just one tool. And if you don't feel comfortable in using the fasting or the detox as a tool, what would you guys recommend people to do if they want to do something else?
You go first.
Okay. Well, I think, like, first, when, you know, just listening to it, we're not bashing on food, man. It's not like none of us don't love
the best thing in the world.
I love fruits. I love food. You know, exactly. Hand on the heart. I love it. You know, that's not the point. I think it's a matter of a spiritual journey. Like you said, you know, there's a clingy attachment to food. I can't let go. I can't live without it. Well, that's true to some degree, but to understand what is it that's actually nurturing and healing my body, and what is it that's suppressing the emotions and not allowing me to grow and move forward. I mean, when I was exercising and working out, the flattest abs I had was when I stopped eating things that was inflammatory for me, right? Not this crunch, not this exercise. It was from the inside, right? All the gas disappeared and it just was like a tank. I was like, wow, I didn't change a thing about my workout. I just changed what wasn't good for me, right? And what necessarily isn't good for you, like you mentioning, Natasha, can be very stimulating because there's a lot of additives and things to it. So we get super confused. How can it not be good? It tastes so good. It feels so good, right? Because I don't really have that deeper connection or understanding to myself, kind of where it's coming from. So I think once again, you know, it really comes back to your own journey and not being attached to everything around. You're going to need nutrition, going to need hydration to continue. And what we are talking about is a healing phase and then finding a way for you to eat moving forward in life. We're not saying be on a detox, be on this kind of healing battle for the rest of your life. But if you haven't for a long time, it might take you a little bit of time to heal, right? And, you know, I'm not fully healed from that. I wouldn't say either. I still have things I work through, but maybe I've done 80% of the work or 85 or something like that, and I have a good balance. I go deep sometimes when something comes up, but I'm not on a continuous journey moving forward.
Yeah, we're not digging anymore.
No. So that I would tell you, I said, I don't really know if that answered the question, but I really think that's kind of the way forward, you know, not holding on to a lot of things and really coming from within. What do I want to do? What am I driven to do? What's really me, right? Like, you start eating organic food in the beginning, people are like, oh, it doesn't taste anything. What's going on, right? Because your taste buds are all super stimulated. It can't feel anything. I remember we used to do this physics projects in school, like make your own Coca-Cola or something. I don't know. It was no specific product. I'm not bashing on a product, but like make your own soda drink. When do you feel the sugar? And we put one cube of sugar, next one, next one. I think it came up to like 30 before people started to feel it. And I was like, wow, that can't be right. You know, there's no connection. And if there's no connection, I can have the best ideas in the world, but what am I really doing? How does it feel when I'm the right way? I have no idea. So I think that's really my message, right?
Yeah.
Figure out like how to listen to yourself and how your body actually talks when you feel aligned.
This is something, it's quite fun to observe, both for me and for people themselves. I have this 3-week called the Detox Challenge. It's more about cleaning up the diet and then going to the level of detox they feel comfortable with. And then I collaborate with this super nice restaurant that people can pick their meals up from. And the first few days, a lot of people that come from a very different diet, they're like complaining about this food. Can you tell the kitchen doesn't taste of anything, blah, blah, blah. And then on day 3 or 4, they're like, oh, so now it got better. Now they started to add things in. Now it tastes better. I was like, nope, it's your taste buds. They are suddenly coming back alive. They're no longer numb from all of these things that you normally add to the foods that you're eating. So it's so fun. In the beginning, I didn't think of even preparing people to tell them about this, because when I've had the food, I've just enjoyed it. It's so long for me that I've used those things in my food that I didn't think of it. But now I'm preparing them for what's coming, so they don't think the food is actually bland or not tasty. They just know. So yeah, that was just a comment to that. But what I do with people that doesn't want to fast or not ready for it, I'm not saying everybody have to at all. Not at all. I just think, again, you need to know why you're doing it. And if you want to change your relationship with food, something needs to change. So you have to have the will to change something. So if you want to stay on the exactly same diet, I'll probably not be able to help you. You have to be willing to change something. So whether it's maybe just small changes or big changes or diving into a fast, your body might go through a detox process. So what we call detox that we're so afraid of, it might be really just a few changes, cutting out a few things, and the body is on a detox. Mm-hmm. So I won't promise them that they won't be doing any detoxing, but they might not be doing any fasting. But I definitely want them to explore changing their food habits. Otherwise, it's impossible for me to coach them and for them to trust what is coming up if they are kind of always influenced by what's in the food they're eating. And then, of course, coaching them in the emotional part, that is essential. You can't change somebody's relationship, as Sarah was saying, with food, unless you're working on the emotional stuff, because the reason behind. It can be about food as well, like the additives and so on. It can be about parasites, but it's never only about that. Never.
No, never. No, I mean, it's about the nervous system, grounding the nervous system, and helping people to work through the unprocessed emotions, blockages, traumas, stress, stressors, unfinished stress processes. And really coming to the core of why we need something from the outside to help us feel safe and connected and grounded. So it doesn't really matter what the person is overdoing or overusing or using as a coping mechanism. It's for us, I would say it's very possible to work with someone way beneath, you know, the whatever the food layer is all about. If they come here, they will automatically start to detox, use most people, because the food that is here is just so clean. And
pretty delicious, I want to say. Like, so delicious.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, we could be more strict with the food, actually. I mean, for you, I think that's probably, you can see that. But for many people, it's already super strict. So I like that we have this deep level of how deep we can go with the food. But
you know, it's maybe more strict to the person who needs that and positioning it past.
Yeah.
But that you don't come here and you feel forced to, I think.
No. So everyone, to make it clear that, to say that everyone who comes here has their individual food program. But we do not serve sugar. We don't serve any caffeine or stimulants. We don't serve any animal products. And we don't serve any gluten.
Yeah.
But within that range, you can go as deep as you want in the detox.
Yeah.
And we also surf it. It's like we follow the organism because it's the yeah, people come here to detox. And when we say, when I say detox, I say detox from food, from emotions, from programs, from thought patterns, from belief systems, for relationships, whatever it is. And then connecting to what Simba said, like, what is it that I want? What is good for me? So we don't have any, I say that people can heal on any diet because what I know, since I've been struggling with my food or my weight for so long, it's not about the food. It's not about the food. It's the balance in your body between the physical, the organ health, the vitality, the life force, the stress, the adrenals, the kidneys, the unprocessed traumas, like where is the energy going?
But don't you agree that it can fast track it?
It's such a fast track.
Exactly.
Oh my God, it's a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
It just cracks you right open.
Yeah, they look for quick fixes, but faster, you work good at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, coming to the farm and checking in here and say that you're ready for the full experience, that's a ride.
Yeah, you'll go all in.
Yeah.
Which I've done, so I know it. I'm in the middle.
Yeah.
Just before we have to finish, we actually have interesting questions from, I posted on my Instagram the other day, if people had something about food relationship and food addiction. And this tree I would like to pull out just to maybe answer. So one of them being sugar addiction, even the healthier stuff. So this person probably means that they've gotten rid of maybe the addiction to like very processed candy and chocolate and stuff, but maybe it's, you know, the raw food, the raw treats, the dates, all of that. So any of you guys that want to give that one a go?
I would say that I would say that this confirms my hypothesis that I just had, that it's not about what you are addicted to. It's the fact that you are addicted. And it's not about, it's about shedding layers. So you shed the first layer with the sugar and it's like, okay, good. I mean, that's great to get rid of the sugar addiction because it's not very good for the body in terms of candida and parasites and stuff like that. But you can still be addicted to eating and eating nice things and eating sweet things and dates and the raw chocolate bars and, you know, all of these healthy things. They are also super addictive because they are super tasty. And if you haven't worked through the underlying cause, you're just going to shift from one thing to another. And it's just going to be healthier and healthier and healthier.
This was one thing I thought personally, I'm never, ever going to be able to get rid of my like sweet addiction. Mm. Oh, because I grew up on it, the processed stuff. Then I went also. You often replace one addiction with something that's a little bit better. a lot of people do that. So then I went into, of course, dive right into all the raw treats. Oh, they're delicious. And I was always the one wanting to finish a meal with that, try all kinds of the gluten-free cakes and treats. And I just thought that was me. But that was still an unhealthy relationship. That was still something I felt like I was attached to. I felt had control over me. And it wasn't until I really started looking at, but why? What is the emotions behind? And now I like to try it, but I'm fine if I don't have it. I don't have to finish a meal with it. I actually prefer the sweetness from fruits. I thought I would never, ever be able to say that. And that not until within, I would even say the last 2 years, I've gotten to that point.
Yeah.
It's taken a lot of years working on shedding different layers.
And just to say that that is the way you do it.
Yeah.
That there's just not like you. It's not a like a switch on the wall. Like now, like that I'm free from whatever. It always goes in layers, and like you say, Simba, like the rainbow path. It's like you go step by step by step. So getting rid of one addiction and then realizing what the next layer is, that's the journey. So good on you that you've managed to get rid of the sugar addiction and then you're ready for the next layer.
Yeah.
And then there's another one saying overeating and eating bad things for comforting myself, I think. So this is somebody that is at least aware that this is what she's doing. Mm-hmm. So well done for the awareness even that yes. Nobody's doing it for comforting yourself. Mm. So Simba, do you want to give that one a go?
Yeah. It's I think kind of ties together with the last question with the sugar addiction. So you're right about everything you say, the behaviors and sugars, but also the brain chemistry, right? And from neuroplasticity, we know we can actually change and shape our brain by our behaviors and patterns. So a big part is to actually reshape it, right? To have a pause from when you feel like I have to have this roll bar or this sugar or whatever it is. Have a pause so your brain kind of goes, oh, stimuli, have a little bit of space to make a new choice. And every time I make a new choice, even if it is to eat the raw bar, right? I at least have that awareness and it starts to build like a little bit of a gap between those reactions, right? It's not addictive in the same way. And that will start to kind of shape the chemistry. And like you said, Sarah, with the rainbow path, right? That you eat something, you know, healthier sugar and it will gradually wear off, right? The brain kind of, the body starts to respond differently. Overeating in general, I think one of the easiest ones to look at is that thirst and hunger are very similar in the brain, right? They are very easy to confuse. And I think a lot of people are dehydrated and they might actually be eating when they actually are thirsty. And I'm not saying thirsty like drinking water. You can get fluids from eating fruits and vegetables and so on. But I think to really make sure the body is hydrated before we kind of eat more, right? And pacing yourself also, right? Back to awareness. Don't eat and watch something if you know you're overeating. Don't watch a movie and just kind of missing my mouth and trying to put something anywhere where it goes. Be more conscious. Have nothing that distracts you. Take your time, chew, breathe, like really plan time for when you're eating so you become aware of how much you're eating and how it feels in your body when it starts to feel full, right? Because chances are there's a big disconnect. I'm just eating out of habit and, oh, this is so good and I have to take more and more and you're not even feeling that you're starting to become full, right? So awareness, I would say, is a big part when it comes to overeating.
Yeah. I have something that I would like to add that I discovered through one of my teachers because I had the overeating was a massive thing. And this is something that I have been working with a lot of my clients too, and is maybe something that people are not aware of, but it's also a generational trauma because it's a cultural, so I'm from Sweden, and in Sweden, the history of Sweden is that large parts of the people, of the population, had for generation for long periods of time come from starvation and like not having enough. So it's this energy of meagerness that is it goes from generation to generation. So we actually inherit a foundation inside of us that we don't have enough. We don't know when the next meal will come. So we have this meagerness and that we kind of get to have it all. And that is actually a quite deep thing to heal from, but being aware of it. And the people that I've worked with that have seen this and can relate to it and can connect with it, they go, oh my God. Because it's this feeling inside that you don't know where it comes from, because it's like, I don't want this. I know there's enough.
Yeah.
So that was a massive one for me when I healed that.
That is actually a very good point, because of course, one thing you also have to know is whether you're starving yourself, when you're setting yourself up for this bitch. That was definitely the reason why I started. One of the reasons why I started, because I starved myself on my competition diet up to my fitness competition. But then later on, so that's also good to know. It might not even be yours. It might be generational, as Sarah is saying, which in most countries really kind of happen. But then also to look at, if you know already it's for comforting yourself, like, be ready to look at, well, what am I, why do I need to comfort myself? Is it because emotions are coming up? Is it because there's an emptiness around me inside? Is something you're lacking in your life, or that feels overwhelming, that wants to come off, that you kind of want to numb down as well? So it's like looking at, am I doing it because I starved myself? Yeah, but am I also doing it because there's something I do not want to feel? It makes me feel uncomfortable, and I'm comforting myself. So be ready to go on that journey and maybe work with somebody to dive lower, because if it's a really a deep addiction, it can be super, super hard to break on your own. Yeah. And don't think that you're alone, because there's many more people who are struggling with it that are willing to admit, unfortunately. I hope that it will be a thing that we can talk about more open and normalize.
I agree.
So many people, and you're alone. So that's what I want to say to kind of round off with.
I like that. Okay, that was, we come to the energy just felt closed. And thank you so much for joining us today and discussing just a little bit of this massive topic. And if you have questions or you can relate, you let us know. And if you have questions in the future, we are happy to answer. And you can check out our website if you need something from us, livingwiththespirit.com, or at Instagram or whatever, or you can email me, sarah@livingwiththespirit.com, if you want to ask any kind of question. And how do they find you, Natasha?
Through my Instagram, which you can link to. Say that's easier, Natasha Nilton DK, but it's super hard to spell. It's Natasha spelled in a difficult way, so you link to it, it's easier. And also stay tuned for our joint venture together, our upcoming retreat, and online workshop. So that's something that I think is going to be, I know it's going to be so powerful with the three of us together.
Yes, this is just the beginning.
Yes, it is. So thank you so much for having me both here at the farm and in your podcast. I love being on and discussing this topic that I'm super passionate about.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, and I'll see you soon for fire ceremony.
I will get ready.
Yes. Ciao.
Ciao. Bye.